Welcome to Endnotes. My name is Sheila Broderick. In this podcast, I invite people to share their funeral playlist and their thoughts about death, dying, ritual, and the afterlife, if they believe in one. My guest today is Mose Jacobs. Born in Amsterdam sometime in the previous century, Mose M. Jacobs was fascinated by letters from an early age. The magic was mesmerizing. Open a book and disappear into another world. Meet talking animals or float in a giant soap bottle. The perfect escape. The same was true of radio. She used to spend a lot of time by herself and loved listening to Sunday morning programs about nature, radio plays or on-air comedians. In Dutch initially, but when she was 10, her mother took her to England for 8 months, where an Irish gardener taught her the basics of English. She wrote stories sitting in trees. It was the start of a lifelong relationship with the English language and, as it turned out later, with Ireland. She celebrated her 18th birthday on holiday with her best friend's family in a cottage in Connemara. She says, "Ireland felt and still feels unlike any other country she has ever visited." Having lived and worked in Liverpool and Belfast, Mose returned to Amsterdam in her early 20s, where she worked as a music journalist, wrote fiction stories, made some radio and TV shows, and played saxophone. She next visited Ireland in 1986 with her partner, a friend, and a six-month-old baby dangling from the ceiling of a car in a Moses basket. There was that something in the landscape and the air that compelled them to come back time and again. They finally settled 10 years later near Clonakilty as a family of four. She has since worked from home as a translator and continued to write, play music, perform sound poetry and make online radio programmes. You're very welcome, Mose.
Thank you, Sheila. I'm quite excited to be part of this venture.
Well, you have had a very interesting life. You were born in Holland and now live in Ireland. Can you tell me if there are many differences between these countries in the way in which death is dealt with?
Well, I'm sure there is, but I cannot say a lot about the way death is dealt with in Ireland. Obviously, there is a religious overlay because people are often, I find they sort of reject things because religion tells them it is like this or it is like that, and then they don't feel comfortable with that. And I think in Holland, people I grew up with had left religion behind them not very long ago. My grandmother was a Catholic and my grandfather was a Protestant, not the other way around, and they left that for socialism, so they were not religious in that sense. And actually that sort of didn't serve them that well, because my uncle died when he was 13, and I think his death sort of pervaded the house and made them very unhappy. They went to the cemetery every week, but they didn't believe in an afterlife, and I was found that difficult. So for me personally, I can only talk about me personally, not about countries. That used to be like a dark black wall at the end of life, and there was nothing beyond it. And I've since changed my mind, but not through a religious experience, but more like reading and other experiences. And I think music also played a part in my changes and my it's not a conversion, it's just that it's opening up as a possibility. You know, there's a thing called Pascal's wager, where it always appealed to me, and it's like you can't lose in this one. You can believe that death is the end, but if you believe that it's not the end, you can't lose, because if it is the end and there is nothing, and I cannot imagine nothing, then who cares that you believed the thing that was wrong? So I believe in loads of things, whatever I fancy. Yeah.
So have you any specific experiences of how death is dealt with in Holland?
Well, I mean, I can tell you about how we did my mother's cremation and the first piece of music by Igor Stravinsky, who composed a lot of music for ballet initially, is something that we chose for her cremation, and it was played as the coffin went down. It's called The Round Dance of the Princesses, and the way we did it, I have step-family, step-sisters, and I had a step-brother then, is that we chose different pieces, and I found that a very good experience to choose what you want to hear on someone's cremation. It's a bit like we're doing now, you know. So one thing that was quite special about her cremation is that her step-granddaughter danced, because she was a dancer and a dance teacher, and we also saw a video of her dancing at age 74. She was quite old when she got me, so she died 87 with dementia, but the video was made when she was 74 and she danced with another elderly dancer, and it was a beautiful duet, and she was really present in the room at that time. And I'm not sure if that would happen in Ireland, but it, for us it was very liberating in a way to be able to choose what we wanted. For example, when my stepfather was buried or cremated, can't remember, one of his elder daughters said in public, like, my father was the worst father and the best father. And she had examples of both. And I thought that was liberating as well, that people can express negative emotions. And maybe that is a difference between Ireland and Holland, that we're a bit superficial. We tell you our life story within 2 hours when we first meet you, and that, you know, I've been here 20 years, but I've not heard a lot of intimate life stories like that from Irish people. But that also has a dark side in the sense that we're superficial, so the depth of experiences sort of gets snowed under by a lot of talk.
Well, let's listen to some music. Coombs, you said that your mother was cremated. Would you wish the same for yourself?
Well, I don't really care. I think that's one thing I felt when I was preparing for this program, is that essentially the funeral or the cremation is up to the people left behind. And I wish them the best experience. Some of the things I've chosen, some of the pieces I've chosen are for that reason. And as long as they make sure that I'm dead, I don't care what they do. I do actually, it depends on the atmosphere, because where we did the cremation of my mother, it was in a lovely atmosphere. It was outside where you could see trees, and some churches have a lovely atmosphere. So the next piece by the Staple Singers, Respect Yourself, it's like a cross, or it's gospel and soul, and I love gospel and soul precisely because of the combination of the sacral and the secular, especially that, you know, the sexual and the religious. And Respect Yourself, that's a great message.
The back.
So you've said you really don't mind what happens to your body after you die, but what do you think in your innermost private moments about what death means to you?
Well, I'm fortunate in that I've never experienced a near-death experience, but I've read a lot about it. And based on all sorts of second-hand information and some dreams and other experiences, I believe we don't die, the spirit doesn't die, and I also believe we could have had more lives than one. I'm quite sure of it. I'm not sure how it all fits together, but I think we just sort of... People say you merge into the source, and other people say you start a new life and are born again, and maybe it's all true, I don't know. The next piece of music, Another Time, by the Canadian singer-songwriter Thomas Rapp. I heard it first when I was 13, and I didn't understand it, but I was very drawn by his poetry, basically. And now when I listen to it, I think it is about reincarnation. So maybe if anyone listening to it could listen to it from that perspective. Do we meet again? Perhaps.
Where have you been to? Where did you go? Did you follow the summer out? When the winter pushed its face in the snow? Or have you come by again to die again? Well, try again another time. Did you follow the crystal swan? Did you see yourself deep inside the velvet pond? Or have you come by again to die again? Well, try again another time. When you set to shape the world, was the shape of you? Or did you cast enchanting glance through the eye that all men use? Or have you come by again to die again? Well, try again another time. Did you find that the universe doesn't care at all? Did you find that if you don't care, this whole wrong world will fall? Or have you come by again to die again? Well, try again another time. Jewels in the sky. Did you find that the world outside is all inside your mind? Or have you come by again to die again? Well, try again another time.
In reincarnation, Mose, death must be present in your life all the time as part of the cycle of life.
I wish. I mean, I feel happiest when... I mean, okay, I'm not a believer in as such, but I am somebody who questions and seeks answers, and then when you find an answer, you have another question, you go on seeking. So I feel happy when I do that, when I'm seeking for something. It's actually an instinct that animals have as well, I've discovered. And I'm also happiest when I feel that I'm not confined to this particular life or this second in this life. And there is, you know, life gets better if you take a wider view. If you think, okay, I'm feeling unhappy now, I'm feeling depressed. I was depressed this morning because I was thinking about my father and I couldn't get true to him in my mind. But now I'm not depressed because I have a wider view and I think, okay, there's going to be other moments. So I wish, in that sense, I wish that I was more aware of previous life, future lives or whatever. But you have to cross the threshold of death unless you, you know, do other things like meditation or hypnotherapy or regression therapy. And I picked the next song because I had a dream as a child, 7, 8 years old, where, and the dream was just that in our living room there was a huge light falling through the windows. But it wasn't, it was a bit of a nightmare. It was much brighter than normal light, but it was very cold. So in that sense, it frightened me, but it also attracted me. And for some reasons, I think the same quality is in the Peggy Lee song Fever, which we're going to listen to next. I heard it when I was 12. In our neighbor was a composer. I lived on a houseboat. He was there and I heard that song and I was just sort of totally drawn to it. And later I discovered it was Peggy Lee's song Fever. And there's also an Elvis version. But this version has that, it has that coldness, but it also has a kind of cool heat which compensates for the coldness. So and that's why it pleases me. And I hope that anyone listening to it when I'm dead will get the same sort of pleasure from it. It's very simple but very effective.
Never know how much I love you, never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, a fever all through the night. Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, and you know I'm gonna treat you right. You give me fever when you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, a fever all through the night. Everybody's got the fever, that is something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing, fever started long ago. Romeo loved Juliet, Juliet she felt the same. When he put his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame. Now give us fever when we kiss it, fever with thy flaming youth. Fever, I'm a fire, fever, yea, I burn forsooth. Captain Smith and Pocahontas had a very mad affair. When her daddy tried to kill him, she said, Daddy, oh, don't you dare. Give me fever with his kisses, fever when he holds me tight. Fever, I'm his missus, Daddy, won't you treat him right. Now you've listened to my story, here's the point that I have made. Chicks were born to give you fever, be it Fahrenheit or centigrade. They give you fever when you kiss them, fever if you live you learn. Fever till you sizzle, oh, what a lovely way to burn. What a lovely way to burn.
Moose, have you had any other dreams about death?
Well, yes, I've had one death where one dream where I was in a place. I don't know if everyone listening knows it, but there is a place called Longstrand, close to Clonakilty, with dunes. And long before I ever came there, I dreamt that I was death, and that I walked up those or similar dunes, and that I met the woman that I was in Ireland with, the mother of my best friend, who was like a mother figure to me as well. And she sort of welcomed me, and it felt very real. I don't know, you know, it's a dream, so I don't know if things are like that, but you sometimes hear that death is like a tunnel. You know, people who have near-death experiences say that they go to a tunnel towards light, and they often say that they're received by loved ones and friends. And this felt like that, like somebody was welcoming me who was, you know, close to me and dear to me. So that was one of the dreams I had. And I don't know if it's an accident that you could locate it in Ireland, because I feel that the Irish landscape and lots of things about it, the way Sheephead is, and the sea and the ocean and the mist and whatever, maybe there are places that are closer to other dimensions, and I think Ireland certainly must be one of them. Maybe Iceland is too, I don't know, I've never been there. And the next song is an Irish language song. I do not speak the Irish language, I'm very sorry about that. I should have gone to a Gaeltacht perhaps. When we were in Ireland around my 18th birthday, we listened to Clannad, and they were singing in Irish. We bought that record, brought it home. It's a folk song, and to me it represents everything that is sort of magical or other about Ireland, which I love. And I hope that the people who are at my funeral or my cremation or whatever, when they hear it, will also have that kind of, you know, it's a bit, you can travel in the mind, you know, you can go, you don't have to go on holidays to say, oh, I want to go to New Orleans, would it be like? And in a way, if you listen to Clannad singing this, you say, oh, Ireland, I want to go to Ireland, what would it be like? And you see the sea and you can hear the fairy sing. I always like the idea of Tír na n-Óg, the land of youth, where, you know, the island in front of the coast, the non-existent island, where you'd go when you die, I think.
us what you think about your own death, but how do you think about the death of those people closest to you, your family, for example?
Well, that is the nasty thing about death. I think it's not death itself, because by all accounts that could be quite a smooth transition, or you hope it will be. But of course, when people around you die, that is quite horrible. I know that my grandparents never got over the death of their son, although I've known other people who got over, you know, who could deal with it more easily than they did. And I, you know, I don't really want to contemplate the death of children. You know, it's even just even to say it is like you don't really want to do that, because it's almost like, you know, calling it up, and I don't want to do that. It's different when parents die, but I think what matters greatly is whether you got how you feel about them, because if there's a difficult relationship between people and they die, you feel much sadder, I think, because the chance of ever making it right has gone forever, or for this life in any case. For example, I didn't get on well with my stepfather, but when he died I felt much more troubled than when my mother died a few years earlier, because I, you know, it was never resolved. Whatever was bad, the bad blood between us was never resolved. And funnily enough, I met his first wife at his cremation, and we became great friends afterwards, which was really lovely. She's now dead also, but oh, that's a good example. Anna, his first wife, became a great friend, even though she was much older, and she knew both him and my mother in their youth. So she was a source of information, and I was sad when she died, but she prepared for it by talking about it and making sure that everything was in order. And I think that is a great example. That's a great example for me, that people sort of talk to you about how they want their death to be like, you know, I don't want to be revived or whatever, and that they can just slip away, and then you can feel at peace with it quite easily. With my father, I had a difficult relationship, so his death really hit me hard and made me quite depressed. But fortunately, about 2 years later, I gave birth to my daughter. I also have a son, and I think all births are very special, but of course the first time you go through that transition and you don't know if you're going to be able to do it and how you feel about your child. I found being pregnant quite difficult, but giving birth and then reconciling with parts of yourself. That when I gave birth to my daughter, I realized I had a bad feeling about myself as a baby, so I had to get over that in the first few hours, but then I got over that, and then it was really lovely to see the new life, the new person, and we wanted her to have a good experience and a serene environment, so the music that we're going to listen to now is Japanese koto music, and that we played that when she was really small. So that's why I want to play it at, or I would love someone to play it at my funeral, cremation, or whatever it's going to be, and feel calm and at ease and peaceful, because I want people to know that I don't mind dying. I don't mind.
Mose, in our times, human death is occurring later and later in a lifetime. How do you consider human death in relation to other planetary cycles, for example, the short lifespan of insects or the longer lifespan of trees and mountains?
Well, I don't know about insects and what they feel, but I do feel very strongly about the death of nature. And I think that's a huge problem on our planet. And it's so bad in a way that people don't want to really think about it. I'm Facebook friends with somebody who is from Cameroon, Alphonse Bunga from the Cameroon rainforest, or his people used to live there, like they're Pygmies and he's about Pygmy Bantu, and they've been displaced, and they're musicians and they're living in a town close to the forest, or I don't know, but their band, the Orchestre Patengue, wants to come to Europe or anywhere to play at festivals, and I'm trying to organize a gig for them, which is very difficult. I think their music is really beautiful and vibrant, and it also intrigues me because these people have been in the rainforest for thousands of years, I think, and they're like, in a way, like our history and hopefully our future as well. They have video clips where they appear as a tribe, as a people, and you see the forest in the background, but you also see the vans with the logs at the back that cart away the trees that have been murdered and slaughtered. And that's one reason, for example, why when I go to a shop I try not to buy things with palm oil, because our forests are being murdered on a large scale and we can't survive without them. So check out the labels if you are in Lidl's or in Super Value, and try not to buy anything but sustainable palm oil as an ingredient. This song, Pleurs de la Forêt, is about tears of the forest, and it conveys both what you lose when you lose your environment, but also the vibrancy of people still in contact with nature and with their inner nature, I think. Also with death, which to them is closely connected to God.
you talked earlier about Ireland being another dimension, to what extent do you think music and literature are other dimensions for exploring ideas and sentiments about death?
Well, I think very much so. I think it is art, and including music and literature, is one of our ways of exploring other dimensions, including death. It's a way to explore the dimensions in our head. I wouldn't say that that is the same as death, but it's certainly not the same as the normal concrete life of going to the supermarket and buying peanut butter. The next thing that I would my people in the funeral hall or cremation hall to listen to is something that is a collaboration between myself and my partner, Karel von Kleist. He makes soundscapes. He's also a film composer. And I've used some of his soundscapes in a format that he explored earlier, which is the combination of text, poetry, or stories, and a soundtrack. I compare it to film, you know, you see the story on film, but you hear the soundtrack and it influences you. And this particular one actually was partly based on a dream I had, which is the funny thing is you forget death as you forget dreams. It's there, but you don't think about it a lot of the time, and then suddenly you remember. And this dream was actually after he died. I saw my father a couple of times in dreams. One time he was frying an egg, and another time he was sitting on a lake in a small boat without oars, which is what this soundscape partly is about. The soundscape is also about my mother, and it's about my father. Even though we may have difficult relations with our ancestors, they still influence us to a great extent, and we should be grateful for that. So this is sound poetry. I did get to this through the writers' group in Clonakilty, which led to the spoken word evenings in the Barra set up by Nick Smith, which I'm now caretaking these evenings as bespoken words. So I hope people will come to that and listen to all sorts of combinations of words and other media.
The Empty Lake. There is a cavity underneath my diaphragm that separates the thorax from the abdomen and is composed of two muscles, formerly my mother's territory. It is a densely populated anatomical landscape. Liver, gallbladder, pancreas, spleen, the large and small intestines, uterus, kidneys and stomach, all tightly packed and artificially divided into 9 different regions. Somewhere down there, a vacuum exists. A vast grey lake filled with an obscure substance, gaseous, or maybe a liquid, dotted with the silhouettes of reeds. It is twilight, misty. trapped in the chilly, clammy instance before daybreak. A day that takes forever to arrive. This is where, long after he had died, I met my father, bobbing up and down, in a small boat, without oars, as he muttered vaguely about Rainer Maria Rilke, the German poet, born in 1875. The only child of an unhappy marriage, who produced, among others, elegies and sonnets. During a savage creative firestorm, a hurricane of the spirit that wiped away all the cobwebs of a writer's block brought on by depression. All angels are terrible, he wrote. Or should that be terrifying, horrible, dreadful, a terror? So much is lost in translation, whereas other things are gained. And jeder Engel ist schrecklich, he wrote. All angels are terrible.
Ein jeder Engel ist schrecklich. 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 Ein jeder Engel ist schrecklich.
Mose, you've been very creative across a wide range of activities. What kind of legacy do you think that you'll leave behind?
Thank you for this compliment. I think whenever I am creative, those are the highlights of my life, apart from the love you share with people, friends and family. Because creativity is about ideas, but I find it a real struggle to be creative. Because you have to go through a lot of shit to actually find the gold, you know, the fool's gold. And it's often a struggle to focus and to be able to not worry about things and just follow your ideas, follow your stream of thoughts, trust in your creativity. One thing I find very useful in that is meditation, for example, that links on to the soundscape we've just been listening to. Like, you have to really go into your own body, but that is a great thing because everyone can go to their body. Even if you're paralyzed in a wheelchair, you have a body, you have several bodies in fact, and you can go into them. If I talk about legacy, I hope that some of the ideas I'm discovering and I'm trying to translate into creative products such as sound poetry or the books I'm hoping to write, or the graphic novel I've actually written, which is about science fiction, but also not as we know it. You know, science fiction is real in a way. Star Trek is real. Think about Star Trek and think it is real, and you know, you come closer to what the world may be about. So I hope that my ideas are like a legacy and that people pick up something. They're not my ideas, but I hope they pick up ideas from what I've left. Thank you for this lovely funeral.
And how are you going to end your funeral?
Well, I hope, actually, what I would love people, I mean, I picked a song, a New Orleans music, because I'm taken by their ideas of dancing and singing when somebody has died and twirling your umbrella and have a great time. You know, and this funeral march with Wynton Marsalis, a very great trumpeter in London, and other friends there, saying goodbye to one of their colleagues, and they're doing it in style and with exuberance. And I hope people will go dance on my grave.
Been listening to Endnotes with me, Sheila Broderick. My thanks to Mose Jacobs for sharing her funeral playlist and her views about death, dying, and associated rituals. Thanks for listening.